You are listening to All the Backlist, a weekly show about books that are not new. I'm your host for the week, Trisha Brown, and this is episode number 427.5. I hope that wherever you are on this late August day that you're doing all right. There is a lot in the world to navigate these days, and I hope whatever waters and challenges you are navigating are as clear and smooth as they can possibly be. For my part, I'm in that odd transitional period between a last summer vacation and the beginning of school. And I feel like even if you don't have kids, the beginning of school feels like a season that you still can't really avoid. School supplies and back to school photos on social media, again, no matter whether or not you have kids, are the thing that kind of transitions many of us from that swimming pool and sunscreen season to pumpkin spice latte season and leaves falling and Halloween costumes. I definitely saw my first Halloween store out the other day in an abandoned mall, unsurprisingly. And I had that sort of summer to fall transition with that school piece shoved in the middle of it in mind recently because I went on a family vacation. And I did not have the transition in mind because the weather wasn't anyway fall-like. It was 105 degrees, so it was really more just the vibe of moving into fall. But it was also the fact that I was on vacation with some of my favorite people, including my two 10-year-old nieces and my almost 13-year-old nephew. And they are actually about to go back to school. So I was quizzing them about what they're reading. Mostly it was selfish because I have always had a love for middle grade books. My mom, who is a fifth grade teacher, has collected Newbery winning books for as long as I can remember. I think her set might actually be complete at this point, at least for now. And I always think of the shelves that held those books in our house and still hold them to this day, actually. Technically, the Newbery Award is an ALA award for the most distinguished contributions to American literature for children. That is a quote. But to me, it's always just sort of felt like the Oscar or Olympic gold medal or World Cup medal or whatever in any given year for a middle grade book, even before I knew what a middle grade book was, which is generally a book targeted for like third to eighth graders. But as an adult, I have loved middle grade books just as much as I did as a kid. I think there is a really exceptional skill that an author has to have to be able to write a story that is accessible to younger readers, but also that carries a depth that can appeal to readers of all ages. So, as you may have guessed, we're going to talk about a couple of favorite middle grade books today, right after we get back from the break.
Today's episode is brought to you by Bloom Books. Charming, easygoing, and rich, Xavier Castillo has the world at his fingertips. He also has no interest in taking over his family's empire, but that hasn't stopped women from throwing themselves at him. Unless, of course, the woman in question is his publicist. The cool, the intelligent, the ambitious Sloane Kensington, who is a high-powered publicist who's used to dealing with difficult clients, but none infuriate or tempt her more than a certain billionaire heir with his stupid dimples and laid-back attitude. She may be forced to work with him, but she'll never fall for him because he's a client and that's all he'll ever be, right? Right, girl, like we all know. So just in case you didn't know, author Anna Wong is the best-selling author and book talk viral author of the Twisted Love series, the King of Sin series. Miss Wong got it going on, okay? Make sure to check out King of Sloth by Anna Wong. And thanks again to Bloom Books for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Penguin Teen. In a world where the children of the gods inherit their powers, a descendant of the Greek Fates must solve a series of impossible murders to save her sisters, her soulmate, and her city. Descendants of the Fates are always born in threes. There's one to weave, one to draw, and one to cut the threads that connect people to the things they love and to life itself. And the Aura sisters are no exceptions. There is Io, the youngest, who uses her fate-born abilities as a private investigator, but her latest job leads her to a horrific discovery. Somebody is abducting women and setting the results revolting wraiths loose in the city to kill. Now, the second book in the series, Hearts That Cut, will be on sale June 18th, 2024. This is a must-read for all Greek mythology and fantasy fans. This is dripping with atmosphere, edged with danger. Threads That Bind weaves together a gorgeous dark tapestry of mystery, faded romance, and modern myth. You won't be able to put this one down, and that comes from Alexandra Bracken, New York Times bestselling author of Lore. So make sure to pick up Threads That Bind by Kitsa Hatsopoulou, and thanks again to Penguin Teen for sponsoring this episode.
So I know some people, now that we're back, are skeptical of kids' books, such as they are. And as someone who reads primarily adult fiction when I read fiction, I totally get that. But the thing that has made me a lifelong reader is my love for stories. It is and has always been the thing that, frankly, I look for first in a book. I feel like in most cases, people who write for younger children are storytellers because they kind of have to be, because many young readers are not going to stick around just for the beautiful prose that an author might put together. It's a fun bonus, and I understand that some readers will come just for that. Some of you probably do and did, but let's allow for a little generality here. But those books just made such an impact on me, and the stories in particular. I think the first high fantasy book that I remember reading was The Book of Three by Lloyd Alexander. And the first mystery I ever remember reading was The Westing Game, which I am sure that Liberty has talked about on this podcast at least once. The first Chocolate Factory set book I ever read was Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. I know you might have thought it was Curious George Goes to a Chocolate Factory, but I've actually never read that one. Try to contain your surprise. All of that to say that when I want to slip into a reliably good story, sometimes I look back for one of my favorite middle grade books or one that has been recommended to me that I haven't read yet. And the ones that I'm going to talk about today are stories that are told from a variety of perspectives that come together to shape what I think is, in both of these cases, a very satisfying finale. So first up is a book called The View from Saturday by E.L. Konigsberg. And that author's name might be familiar to you because she also wrote a book called From the Mixed Up Files of Mrs. Basil E. Frankweiler, which was, speaking of Newbery winners, actually a Newbery winner from the 1960s. And The View from Saturday is a book from 1996. It is about four sixth graders who compose a school academic trivia team and how their coach and teacher kind of brought them all together. So the style of the book is a little bit reminiscent. You might remember the 2008 movie Slumdog Millionaire, which was actually based on a book that came out a few years before that. The style of this book is a little bit similar in that the different questions in the final competition that this book focuses on each offer an opportunity to kind of go back in time and present a vignette about each one of these four kids and how they came to be the kind of person that would know the answer to a particular question. All four of these kids are a little different from one another. One has spent most of his life on a cruise ship. Another is a little bit skeptical of her new step-grandmother, et cetera, dealing with kid stuff. And the question underlying the whole story is how Mrs. Olinsky, who is the coach, happened to pick these four kids for her academic quiz team. She gets asked that question all the time, especially as the team becomes more successful. And occasionally she makes up an answer. In fact, there's like a school administrator who's being kind of a jerk about it. So she lies to him in a way that is a little unusual. And the reality is that she doesn't actually know either until the competition ends how the team came together. The question of how they came together eventually becomes overt. But I think the more satisfying part of the book is the way that the kids organically become a team, overcoming bullies and bus etiquette and all kinds of other life stuff to find kindness and community and tea all together and among one another. I will say The View from Saturday is from almost 30 years ago, so at times it does feel a little bit dated, but that aspect of it, for me personally, did not get in the way of my enjoyment of it. Just kind of something to keep in mind. A more recent book about a more distant time period is Echo, which is a 2015 book by Pam Munoz-Ryan. The story begins, as the book tells us, 50 years before the war to end all wars, which, for those of you who don't remember or didn't know, is a reference to World War I. So it kind of sets this very early short chapter or kind of prologue in the 1860s. And it establishes this sort of magical and mystical framework for the book, which involves a witch and three trapped daughters of a king and a mystical harmonica. I can feel some of you getting skeptical, but stick with me. So like with that short prologue and that background set, we move then pretty quickly into the first of three seemingly unrelated vignettes from the 1930s and 40s, each of which involves a child who is managing a personal crisis, in some cases a life-threatening crisis, and each of whom shares a love of music and eventually a particular magical harmonica, tying us back to our mystical prologue, but we will come back to that. I will let you discover some of that for yourself. Anyway, the first story is set in 1933 Germany, in which Friedrich Schmidt and his father and uncle are trying to figure out how to escape a Germany that is increasingly under the control of Adolf Hitler. Their friends and neighbors are turning on them. They don't know how to navigate it, and they don't know how to get away. We kind of leave that on a cliffhanger and move to the second story, which is set a couple of years later in 1935, when Mike, who is an orphaned kid in the eastern U.S., I believe it's in Philadelphia, is trying to keep his family together. And his family essentially is him and his younger brother. And he will do anything to keep his younger brother safe, even if it means Mike has to go off on his own, possibly to join a touring harmonica band, which sounds a little crazy, but it, you know, seems like it was kind of a big deal in the 1930s. So the boys are maybe going to be adopted. They maybe aren't. It's a lot of stress for an 11-year-old. Again, we end on a bit of a cliffhanger and move into, speaking of a lot of stress for a preteen, the final story, which is about Ivy, whose father is a Mexican-American migrant worker in California in 1942. He gets a job that means the family has to move again, but it seems like the move might be long-term, though it's a little complicated because the farm he's going to work belongs to a Japanese-American family that has been imprisoned in a concentration camp. Ivy is dealing with both racism against herself and her family, but she's also trying to navigate the racism against the Japanese-American family that has been forcibly removed from their home and the property on which Ivy and her family are living. So the three stories sit apart in time and place and unique experience, but there is a love of music that ties the three together. And the final section of the book not only ties the three main characters together, but it offers resolution to that magical mystery I mentioned that opens the book. I'll note that the resolution to some of the conflict might feel like it comes a little bit quickly or a bit easily, but I felt like the storytelling and the way the characters were written really kept me engaged in this book. I don't know if you all watched it, but I recently watched the documentary Judy Blume Forever, and the way Pam Munoz-Ryan is able to put a reader into the heart and mind of a kid felt like it had some echoes of Judy Blume's extraordinary and maybe, frankly, unparalleled ability to do that same thing. So worth checking out for that reason, if nothing else. So whether or not you know someone who is starting school, now you got a couple of books that focus on telling the stories of middle school kids with complexity and depth that I believe can appeal to adults as well. These books are both fairly quick reads. I found them really engaging, and you can find links to both The View from Saturday and Echo in the show notes, so you can just click from there. Thanks, as always, to our sponsor. And speaking of magical and mystical, a huge thanks as well to our audio editor, Jen Zink. And thank you, of course, for listening. For more recs and general bookishness, you can check out bookriot.com. And don't forget to check out our full stable of podcasts at bookriot.com/listen. Or just search Book Riot on your podcast player of choice. As I mentioned, you can find the books I mentioned in the show notes by visiting bookriot.com/allthebooks. Remember that if you are a fan of all the books and all the backlist and you want to show some love, just leave a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. We appreciate the review. It helps other book lovers find us. And if you want to find me, I am on Instagram and now actually Blue Sky. We'll see how that goes. Both at Trisha Haley Brown. And, you know, that's it for today. But for now, until we talk again, please do take good care and happy reading.